Missouri Democrats aren't the only ones raising questions about Senate President Pro Tem Ron Richard and the possibility of pay for play.
There's been a pattern of behavior with this leadership team that certainly would lead you to conclude that people who have made significant contributions got their legislation put to the front of the line.
Republican Senator Ryan Silvey, this week on State House Blend, Missouri. From KCUR Studios, this is State House Blend, Missouri. I'm Brian Ellison. Just 5 weeks left in the regular session, and much of the focus has shifted to the state budget. The House passed a $27 billion budget that would make substantial cuts to some state programs, especially higher education. Not quite as deep a cuts as the governor's proposal would have. The House's plan cuts $22 million from the University of Missouri system, some from the other four campuses as well. Republican Senator Caleb Rowden from Columbia, where the university is based, says, not so fast.
Anytime a dime gets cut, more generally from higher education, but specifically from university, I think that's not something that's in the best interest of not just my community, but the state.
Plenty to talk about with cuts to education funding and health care, too. The budget's on its way to the Senate, where our guest today, Senator Ryan Silvey, is vice chair of the committee that will work through all that. And we've got some questions. Meanwhile, a breakthrough in a standoff that's gone on for years, how the state monitors narcotic drug prescriptions. A lot of supporters say that's an important factor in fighting the opioid epidemic in the state. After a coalition of Democrats and moderate Republicans joined forces on a bill that would make Missouri the 50th state with a monitoring plan over in the House, the immovable object that has stood in the way the last few years, Senator Rob Schoff, had this to say.
The Missouri State Medical Association sent a very clear message to me that they want the PDMP, and so I'm going to give it to them.
Finally, added most of the rest of the General Assembly under their breath, supporters say the new law will save lives. Schoff and others had raised concerns about privacy and who would have access to the database. Strangely enough, the one change he wants to see in the House bill, he wants to require doctors now to use it. And the state's only Democratic statewide office holder, Auditor Nicole Galloway, came out with a report this week that made her fellow Democrats, who ran the state's bureaucracy until this year, look not so great.
The state simply must do a better job managing taxpayer dollars. State agencies have an obligation to eliminate waste, and it's frustrating when we continue to find the same things year after year.
Her audit checked out how federal funding was spent by state agencies in the year that ended in June 2016. Among other findings, the Department of Social Services wasn't adequately verifying whether providers in the Children's Healthcare Program were really eligible to receive some $135 million. Still, Galloway only raised questions about a small portion of the $8.4 billion federal dollars the state received. So it's money in the news, especially the budget. This week on State House Blend, we're taking a bit of a deeper dive into how the Missouri budget works, and our guest this week is uniquely qualified to help with that. Senator Ryan Silvey is a Republican from Kansas City North. He's former chair of the House Budget Committee, and now he's vice chair of the Senate Appropriations. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Always good to have you back. And also joining us, one of the long-suffering souls who sat through the House budget debate this week, joining us by Skype, Will Schmidt of the Springfield News Leader. Nice to have you with us for the first time.
Good morning.
Great to have you with us. So the House budget is complete now. 13 appropriations bills, all perfected and passed and on their way to the Senate. I wonder if you could tell us, Senator Silvey, a little bit about how that works. They total $27.8 billion, but they come through a bunch of different bills.
Sure. So there are different bills for the different departments. Each bill covers kind of one specific area of the budget, and they're ordered constitutionally by order of importance in the Constitution. So House Bill 1 is always debt. Debt's the first thing we have to pay. House Bill 2 is elementary and secondary education, which is the second priority behind debt. Then it goes higher education, and it kind of just filters on down.
It's sort of interesting that you talk about this being constitutional. I mean, there's a lot of things that the House and the Senate can do or might do, do some years and don't do other years. This is really the only thing they have to do, right?
Yeah, the only thing that the Constitution dictates the legislature must pass is a budget. And, you know, we have a deadline by which to do that. I think this year it's May 5th, right around there. And the reason for that is so that the governor can look over that while we still have a couple weeks left in session. And if we miss the deadline, which hasn't happened since I've been there, but if we were to miss the deadline, we could have a concurrent special session while we're all still in town to finish it.
Will, I was watching your Twitter feed during the committee portion of the debate, and there were some pretty interesting things happening there as the meeting of the committee went in late into the night on the night that they were considering the bill.
Oh, the AG's funding, I think, was that was just so unusual for that to happen.
Okay, so tell us about that.
For those who, for those who weren't there, this was, I don't know how late into the process, I want to say hour five or six of the budget committee that came before the floor debate last week. And at a certain point, I think it was Representative Deb Lavender, who's a Democrat from Kirkwood, proposed an amendment to move about, $6.85 million into the public defender's budget. The public defender system in Missouri is underfunded. It's now the subject of a lawsuit by the ACLU. And while this funding wouldn't have really solved their problems, from talking to the public defender, it would have helped them a little bit in the short run. And what happened was, when she proposed this, normally, you know, if the department's budget or an office's budget is affected, one of the representatives comes up and kind of testifies and says, well, no, we need that money. You can't move that. The problem was, in this instance, for the attorney general, his office had nobody in the room. So there was nobody to kind of counter Representative Lavender's argument that this money should go to the public defender. And they waited for quite a while. I think Representative Fitzpatrick was...
That's the House Budget Committee chair.
He was a little lenient, letting them get some time to get in there. I know there were some calls made to kind of alert them that, hey, you're about to lose $7 million. But to no avail, and it passed... passed the committee.
But then the Attorney General's office representative actually did show up after it had passed.
She did. She was, you know, understandably a little, not out of sorts, but a little like frazzled maybe, which totally normal. You know, she was at a track meet for her daughter and suddenly got a call and said, hey, go, you know, make sure they don't take our money.
And she, I understand she even took some ribbing from the committee. She came in wearing a Mizzou sweatshirt, as I understand.
Yeah, and there were a few of them that go M-I-Z in the time-honored tradition of the University of Missouri. I don't think she was too thrilled by that.
you've sat in those chairs, Senator Sylvie. Did she deserve the ribbing for the office not having someone in the room?
You know, they came by and met with me after that had happened to explain what had happened, and I would cut them a little bit of slack. Part of that process is all the amendments are turned into the chairman ahead of time. And then there's a spreadsheet that's compiled of what the amendment would take money from, what the amendment would put money into. That particular amendment didn't specify their fund. It just said other funds. So when we're appropriating, we have federal money, we have general revenue money, and we have other funds. On the spreadsheet, it didn't say which other fund. It just said other funds. So they didn't
know it was from the Consumer Protection Fund.
Correct. So had it said on the spreadsheet Consumer Protection Fund, they clearly would have had somebody in the room. But it's an interesting quirk of the process.
I mean, here's what I actually found most interesting about that story and a couple others from that committee. And I don't know if this has changed since you were chair of the committee, but Democrats in a committee where they are vastly outnumbered, as they are in the whole House, were able to offer an amendment that actually passed the committee. That's an amendment that presumably Republicans in that room knew was not favorable to the Republican Attorney General's office, and yet they supported the Democrats' amendment. And that seems like a change from the more partisan atmosphere that I'm becoming familiar with in Jeff City.
Sure. So, you know, in the years that I was chairman, we actually got unanimous votes on the bills. So we worked very hard to have a bipartisan tone to the budget and allow members of both parties to make changes. But that goes back and forth. Mm-hmm. You know, I think now that used to be, it used to be a very, very partisan process in the House and a nonpartisan process in the Senate. And now it seems like in a number of ways, the two chambers are kind of switching roles.
So let's talk a little bit about the results of that, get to some of the substance of the budget that has now made its way out of the House and has come over to the Senate. It's $27.8 billion altogether. Will, I know you cover the whole State House, not just the budget, but what stands out to you about this budget?
I don't know. I was a little surprised about the that it was fully funded under the, you know, revised formula, but I was even more surprised how little that how little that seems to last, Senator Dan Brown, who chairs the Senate Appropriations Committee, I think he said even before they were finished third reading the bills that fully funding wasn't going to happen.
You're talking about fully funding the foundation formula that funds K-12 education in Missouri.
Right, and there's a little behind the scenes there about if we fully fund the formula, then it triggers extra early childhood spending. And it's, of course, there's a common complaint from Democrats that, this isn't really fully funding the formula because we're still $500 million short under the previous formula. But I don't know. It's always interesting to watch.
I would say that's a tired argument since the previous formula hasn't existed for 12 years.
So we're getting into the...
I'm just relating that it's out there.
No, I get it. For sure. Let's get into the weeds just a little bit here. Let's try to unpack this. You guys both know what you're talking about, but a lot of people will not. The funding formula, foundation formula, is a statute that the General Assembly has set up to say this is how the level at which education needs to be funded. It was last revised in 2005.
Correct.
Senator Silvey, you were in the House at that time. What's the thinking about how did that number get set where it is?
So back in 2005, we were in a situation where the number every year of the old formula was growing unsustainably. Like there was just no way we were going to hit it. And remember, this is prior to the recession.
And is that because it reflected the actual costs of education?
It was set up on a process of heavily weighting towards local match, right? So like a school districts like I represent North Kansas City and Liberty School District. We have very high local levies where we've passed local property tax increases. So because we were getting so much local money, we were getting very little state money. But then it was disincentivizing other districts from raising their local property tax match because they were getting so much state money that they had no reason to raise their. So it was, there was a real tax inequity at the local level. So that's kind of what kind of brought us to the situation. We shifted to a more pupil-focused formula in 05, where we're going to look at, okay, how many kids do you have in your district? What are we setting as a statutory guideline for how much the state should spend on each kid? And then weight that based on percentage of free and reduced lunch, amount of special needs children, and the different cost factors that are involved there. So it's a very complicated formula that went from being property tax based to being student focused is kind of the argument that we went through.
Now Will Schmidt just made the point that a lot of legislators, a lot of people in the state say that the new number, which is not so new anymore, right. 2005, right. is not high right. enough. That it's not that it doesn't really provide enough money for education.
Yeah, and frankly, we don't hear that argument a lot. At least I don't hear that from parents. We are spending $3 billion on elementary and secondary education in general revenue. We also have a constitutional requirement of how much general revenue should go to free public schools, I think is what it says in the Constitution, free public schools, which is 25% of general revenue. We're actually like 34-35%.
So way above what the Constitution requires.
Way above what the Constitution, which is why you don't ever see Missouri in the courts fighting over whether or not it's, unlike our neighbors to the west that are always in court about how much they should be funding schools. So we're never in court because of it. I commend Representative Fitzpatrick for funding the formula. I'm one of the few people left in the legislature who was there in 05 who voted for that. And I've always felt that it was a personal commitment of mine to try and get to what I thought was a good, to fully funding what I said should be the law.
But the big news that Will just named is about early childhood funding, which the funding is tied, the requirement level for that funding is tied to whether the foundation formula is funded, right?
Correct.
So what's happening with that in the House version?
Frankly, I haven't looked at whether or not they tackled that issue or whether they ignored it. I don't know. And we'll go over. We're starting to go through the bills on Tuesday.
Sure. One thing that did come out of the House budget is $45 million more in funding for K-12 public schools than the governor's original budget proposal had. But at the same time, it maintained some of the cuts to higher education that the governor's proposal did. though not as deeply. It didn't cut as deeply as the governor's proposal. It also restored some things that the governor had cut out of the budget, namely benefits for 20,000 seniors and disabled people, costs of in-home care and nursing services. The budget has to be balanced in Missouri. So where is that money coming from? If cuts are being restored, what's being cut instead? Who are the losers in this budget proposal?
One of the losers, I think, you know, we've heard this, is that with the elimination of the circuit breaker tax credit, that which is a tax credit for people who rent, that elderly people or disabled people and elderly people will no longer have a tax credit they can use to pay their rent. And I guess, you know, the argument is that we need to do that to save money. But you could say that these people will be losers under this budget.
So of all the tax credits that could have been eliminated to create a little additional revenue, this is one that targets those who rent, who are probably going to be on the lower end of the income scale.
Correct.
Senator Ryan Silvey, how do you go about, frankly, determining winners and losers? Because that's what you're doing when you're putting together a budget.
Yeah. And in that particular tax credit, that's an interesting discussion. It's not the first time we've had it, by the way. Governor Nixon actually asked us to eliminate it a few years ago. And then when we did, he vetoed it and changed his mind and said, okay, well, maybe not. So we've been through that process before. You know, I think it probably helps a little bit that they use the revenue from eliminating that to fund the in-home and nursing home care. So you're really giving it to more vulnerable people, I guess, if you're going to look at it that way. Mm-hmm. But that's a debate that's going to emerge. I don't think the Senate is 100% locked to go ahead and pass that through.
Well, and let's talk about what happens in the Senate. Unlike when the House takes it up from the governor's budget, you've got a budget in front of you now that's already been through a deliberative process. Mm-hmm. How different is it to handle it in the Senate than it was in the House?
Well, and so to be fair, we also, during the time that the House was crafting their budget, the Senate went through the governor's proposal. And so we had all of the departments in and we've heard public testimony. We've gone through what the House started with. So now we will have that process again with what the House ended with and then figure out kind of where to go from there.
Will you pass your own Senate budget or will you pass a Senate revision of the House budget?
So, technically it becomes the Senate budget because it will be Senate committee substitute bills or Senate substitute bills if we do it again on the floor. And that's what will go to conference. But by and large, I mean, this process, so much of the state budget is unmovable. I mean, for lack of a better word. I mean, there are so many things that the governor recommends, the House passes, and the Senate passes that don't get changed or don't get changed very much. And a lot of it has to do with federal matching programs. Like, in order to participate in certain aspects of Medicaid, we have to, you know, we put in X amount of dollars and the federal government gives us Y amount of dollars. And so that stuff doesn't change very much. You know, where you'll see the differences, you know, this one will be, you know, funding formulas, straight general revenue. So anywhere where it's 100% general revenue, there's a lot of flexibility between what the positions could be. The circuit breaker tax thing creates new revenue that we've put into the budget or that the House has put into the budget. So the Senate will have to decide whether we pass that legislation and accept that money or whether we reject that and figure out, okay, well, if we're not going to take that money, then who are we going to cut it from the House proposal, that right. sort of thing.
Will Schmidt, as you move on to cover other issues, but you'll keep coming back to this budget one, what is there anything else that that stands out to you or that you'll be watching for in this process?
Yeah, I mean, the continued opposition to tolling stuck out. I didn't expect all the tolling discussion or the amendments. To kind of backtrack for people who haven't been following along, there are ways that people can amend the budget, lawmakers can amend the budget by using language instead of numbers. So in this case, a language amendment was added that prohibits MoDOT from so much as spending a dollar on studying tolling. In the past, they've thought about tolling I-70, and I think we're one of three states that still have federal authority to toll an interstate highway, but that hasn't gone anywhere due to just a general sentiment of no tolling in Missouri. And on that, I think it was Representative Corlew has a bill that would allow a public-private partnership for tolling. And he tried to re-amend the budget on the House floor and kind of say, let's just limit this a little bit. And I don't think that went anywhere, if I'm recalling that correctly. Mm-hmm. So I didn't expect the, you know, anti-tolling sentiment.
Senator, I don't think we've had an episode with you on the podcast where we haven't talked about transportation and mm-hmm. the implacability of the of how we're going to fund it as the costs rise in Missouri. Where do you stand on tolling?
Yeah, where I stand on that language is I think it's a little silly to say that the state wouldn't spend money to investigate an issue, right? Because mm-hmm. basically you're saying, I don't want to know because it might come back and say that we should do something I don't want to do. So we're just not, I don't want to find out. Like, to me, that's not good policy. So I would expect there to be a discussion about that in the Senate. And Senator Schaaf, who sits on the Appropriations Committee in the Senate as well, has been very active in public-private partnership discussion for transportation. And we've passed public-private partnership things through the Senate before. So I expect that to be a topic. But as far as what do I think about it, tolling in general, I haven't had a conclusion because I don't have the data, right? And for the legislature to say, or for the House to say, we don't want the data, we can't get the data, I think is probably a little too far, especially when there was nothing line itemed in the budget to do a study, right? It'd be one thing to say, okay, we're going to fund a study or not fund a study. What they've done is they've said, okay, not only are we not going to fund a study, we're going to specifically say you can't use any of this money in any way to try and have a study right. with your flexibility or whatnot. So I think that's probably a little far.
A couple other things I want to ask about. Last week on the podcast, one of our guests was Representative Mark Ellerbrocht, who I believe his district intersects with your Senate district. Is that right?
Yes.
Essentially? Yeah. And he raised a concern, a question. Well, concern is probably not stating it strongly enough. Here's how he answered one of my questions to him.
I mean, are you suggesting that the Senate President Pro Tem, in fact, has been bought for campaign contributions?
I'm not suggesting it. I'm saying it. He has. Look at the numbers.
He's accused Senator Richard of some pretty serious things, being beholden to and bought by campaign donors. That's the leader of your party in the Senate, Ryan Silvey. What do you think about that?
You know, Representative Ellerbrocht has obviously made some strong statements, and he's written a letter, which I've read, which kind of lay out some of the facts. And I'd say that, you know, that it's worthy of certainly some consideration or investigation. I mean, the facts are what they are. I'm not willing to go so far as to say that Senator Richard violated the law, but I'm also not a law enforcement agency. I would leave that up to them.
So what does that mean? You said you would support some investigation. By whom?
Well, I mean, look, the facts are he received large contributions. He filed legislation that would dismiss a lawsuit against the people who made those large contributions. Now, it's not for me to determine motive. It's not for me to determine if that was a quid pro quo. If somebody wanted to look into it, I don't think anyone would be surprised.
What's the best mechanism for carrying out that kind of inquiry?
Well, there are a number of different law enforcement agencies in the state and federal government, and if any of them have taken notice, I'm sure that they would do with their job.
So you don't think it should be an internal inquiry? You don't think there should be an ethics committee inquiry within the Senate about that?
That's something that's really never been discussed. But I do think, you know, there's been a pattern of behavior with this leadership team that certainly would lead you to conclude that people who have made significant contributions got their legislation put to the front of the line of consideration. When you look at how the calendar was ordered this year, when you look at how certain bills have been handled. And, you know, in the past, since I've been around, there was a previous speaker who was investigated for something very similar, for sending a bill to a committee specifically to kill it after receiving a contribution from someone who was against it. So you know, I think, again, whether or not the Senate should have ethics committee, I don't even sit on the ethics committee, I think. But then probably the difficulty of that is the people who do sit on the ethics committee are the people that you're talking about. So I doubt that you would see them investigate themselves.
Are you, it seems like you're saying something pretty significant that in terms of that you're criticizing the leadership of your own caucus there in the Senate in a pretty significant way.
Well, I think they deserve it. I think that that again, the way that they have ordered the calendar, the way that if you look at how bills have been handled, there are approximately 60 bills this session that were referred to different committees last year than they were referred to this year. And several of them, it would be questionable as to whether the committee they were sent to was the appropriate committee of jurisdiction, or if it was sent there because of who the chairman was and how the leadership would anticipate the chairman would handle that bill. I don't think that's how the Senate's supposed to operate, and I have been critical of it, and I think rightfully so.
Is that coming at a cost to you?
Well, I'm not chairman of appropriations, so I think you know, it probably is. I've had one bill on the calendar, you know, so it probably has.
Let's talk about
Senator, real quick.
Sure.
I was just wondering, can you give people an example of what you mean when you're talking about kind of the way a committee assignment can affect how a bill is passed and how a chairman can, you know, alter that? Is there like a bill that comes to mind?
Oh, sure. So last year, the Transportation Network Company bill, frequently the Uber bill, right?
Mm-hmm.
That came to my committee in Commerce, and it's something that had been handled in the Commerce Committee previously. Last year, because of the dispute with the city of Kansas City and Uber, I was not too keen on that legislation, and that legislation never made it out of my committee. This year, mm-hmm. The Uber bill, filed by a member of leadership, did not come to the Commerce Committee. It went to another committee and has subsequently made it to the Senate floor. So I think that's a pretty clear example of how, you know, some people got actively engaged in moving a bill around its opposition. Mm. And I don't even oppose it this year.
Yeah,
which is the crazy part.
Worth
they
noting.
Worked out their deal with Kansas City, and you know, so I had even made it clear that I wasn't going to oppose that bill this year.
I think a lot of people would hear this situation you're describing, where certain bills get referred to certain committees because they know that's going to affect the outcome, and say, "Hey, that's politics. That's how leadership works. That's what we hear every day out of D.C. And what's so wrong with that?"
Oh, I mean, you're going to ask the public what's wrong with politics? I think they would argue the things you just articulated are what's wrong with politics.
Yeah, but not so unusual.
Not so unusual, but I think on this scale, it's pretty unusual. I mean, 60 bills being referred to different committees. If you were to look at the subject matters of those bills and who was on which side and how much money has been contributed, I mean, I think it certainly raises questions. Mm-hmm. You know, what conclusion you draw is your own.
I want to ask you about one other thing, and I think this is the one bill that you do have on the Senate calendar, which is Real ID,
sure.
Right? Real ID, a potential solution for the fact that Missouri driver's licenses after the end of this year will no longer be acceptable forms of identification for boarding flights or getting onto military bases. You are sponsor of a bill in the Senate. A bill in the House has now passed, because it had Democratic support to join with some Republicans, which would create at least an option for drivers in Missouri to get a license that would work and would meet the federal requirements. What are the prospects of that bill in the Senate as of today, as you see it?
So I think they're pretty good. I think people understand that we need to fix this problem before people show up at the airport in January and can't get on a plane. And I think that the solution that I've provided, which is allowing people to opt in or opt out of that federal program, is pretty hard to argue against on a philosophical level. If you're for liberty, if you're for privacy, which is what the opponents of the Real ID program say they're for, then providing an avenue for constituents who share their view to not participate is the ultimate expression of liberty in my mind, and protects their privacy by keeping them out of the database. So it makes it pretty difficult to say, I don't think anybody should be in a database. Everyone should be free. So I'm going to tell you that you can or can't, because it's that's not free.
That is an infringement on their liberty.
Right, right.
Nevertheless, there's at least a handful of Republican senators who do oppose it, and in the tradition-bound Senate, that would mean that they can stop this from happening.
Sure. I mean, they could.
In recent years, the majority Republican caucus has been willing to use the previous question motion, the PQ, to shut down debate and move things forward. Is this one of those issues? Would can you see debate being shut off for this issue?
No, to be frank. And I don't even know that I would advocate that. If a handful of senators are willing to break the Senate over an issue that keeps people off of airplanes, I think they should have to handle those consequences at the ballot box.
But like one of those is Senator Will Krause, who's probably in his last term, right?
He is in his last term. That's
so
right.
So he doesn't really face any consequences.
Unless he wants to run for something else.
Fair enough. So. Last word or question from you, Will Schmidt?
Yeah, Senator, have you talked to Senator Krause about a potential compromise? And second part of the question, does any compromise actually exist here?
I would say yes and yes. So in the time that the bill has been on the informal calendar, I've met with Senator Krause and gone over some of the ideas that he has for amendments. We have language drafted. He has language drafted for some of those. I have some language drafted that I think may help us get to where he wants to get. Again, I don't expect him to vote for it at the end of the day, but I think that, you know, there are some changes that he would like to see in the bill that I think are acceptable and still allow us to have a choice and to participate.
You sought unanimous consent this week to allow sneakers to be worn on the floor of the Senate, and you were shut down.
I was surprised to be shut down, but yeah, so it was Cancer Awareness Day for the American Cancer Society. And there were flyers posted all over the Capitol, wear your sneakers and in your suits to bring awareness to cancer. Senator Chappelle Nadal sits next to me on the floor. And she, of course, is talking a lot about issues in her district dealing with radiation and a lot of nuclear waste creating or causing cancer. So we were talking about it, and she wanted to wear her tennis shoes on the floor. I already had mine on. And so she inquired of the floor leader, Senator Kehoe, and he kind of indicated that he didn't know if that was the best idea. So then I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to ask unanimous consent because the Senate can do whatever it wants with unanimous consent, over cancer. I just thought it was interesting. And he stood up and objected. It broke the Senate for about 5 minutes while they figured out if he was actually going to object. And then he decided he wanted to object.
Did you then remove your shoes for the duration of the session?
You know, I left, and then I didn't spend a lot of time on the floor that day.
Uh-huh.
And then when I did have to go back to the floor, I put on some other shoes.
Wow. Well, we won't give that any more time in the scope of the number of important things that the Senate is dealing with, but it's interesting.
It is interesting.
Will Schmidt of the Springfield News Leader joined us by Skype. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for giving me a chance.
And Senator Ryan Silvey, a Republican from Kansas City North, thank you as always.
Thank you.
Statehouse Blend Missouri is produced by Matt Hodapp. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts, and post a review there if you think positive things about the program. We're also on the NPR One app. Join us by going to Explore and then tapping Follow. We're on Twitter. I'm at PTS Brian. My colleague over on Statehouse Blend Kansas is at Sam Zeff. We sometimes show up on Up to Date at 11 a.m. on Tuesdays on KCUR 89.3. Give us a listen there. And if you have any other thoughts on the program, you can write to me. I'm at brian@kcur.org. I'm Brian Ellison. Thanks for listening.